coming back to this special report by Gary Null. Along with him is Bernard White. And at the conclusion of this next portion, which will be another 15 minutes or so, we will bring you a truncated edition of The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille. This is 99.5 FM WBAI.
And welcome back, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and Bernard White's on the line, and we're talking about the problems and the potential solutions to the conflicts at BAI and Pacific. And we're really interested in solutions, but you can't get the solutions if you don't know what all the problems are and where people's concerns are. When I was on the road, I heard, because I wasn't in New York when all this occurred, I got frantic calls, and the call said the coup had occurred at the station. The national board, led by Bessie Walsh and Utrice Lee, to come in and had taken over. Massive firings were going on. They were trying to sell the stations to make a lot of money and for themselves, and that they had been virtually compromised by outside corporate interest. And then over the next couple weeks, a lot more of that kind of information came. So what I did was I simply started looking into each of the allegations. And the very first allegation I looked into is, well, the Pacifica Foundation is a nonprofit foundation, and its mission is not to be selling stations. What was the actual hard evidence? And indeed, there was a memo. And the memo suggested selling BAI and KPFKA. And I looked at it, and then I spoke with the person who wrote the memo, and I asked him, because it's very important here to understand context. If you don't understand context, you're going to be lost, and you can misdirect a whole effort. And I asked, I said, did you write the memo? Yes. Why? Here is what I was told. Let me just go to some of my research notes here so I quote verbatim, and I like to be very accurate, so I keep detailed records of all the notes that I in my investigation. And the person was open, didn't hide anything, and I got independent corroboration. And the key in all of my investigation is independent corroboration of the statements made by individuals. By the way, I want to thank Armand DeMille for allowing us to use this time, and I will be more than happy to reciprocate on some future date if he would like to use my time as well for his program. All right, let me just check my notes here, catch his note, and I have, let me just see here, I wasn't planning on quoting him. Michael Palmer is the gentleman, board member at that time. He's since resigned. He said, Gary, in 1996, we were looking at a five-year plan, the big picture, and we had a big meeting in San Francisco with the idea of bringing all the people together, and there were a lot of people, station managers, program directors, individual producers, and everybody was asked, make your wish list. And the wish list was, all right, what do you want? Well, everybody wanted more salary, everybody wanted more technical gear, and they wanted to be better facilities, they wanted more staff, they wanted more technicians, more producers, they wanted more programming. And so he said, I took a look at all this, and I looked at our books, and I said, well, nice, but we don't have any money to finance this. So I thought, what a great idea, we would swap signals. Now, swapping a signal means that you take BAI from 99.5 FM, you sell that signal for whatever you can get, and it might be $50, $70, $80 million, whatever you can get for it, $100 million. And then you buy another signal further down on the line. You still keep BAI. It's still there. The difference is that now you have this pot of money. You then apportion to the producers, staff, better facilities, advertising, promotion, in effect, try to take the station forward, even looking at buying other stations, non-commercial stations, in the Midwest where we're not heard, and in the Mid-South where we're not heard, and the Pacific Northwest where we're not heard. They were looking in Seattle. They were looking in some areas in the Chicago area where they felt that Pacifica should also have stations, as they do the current five. He said our entire intent was not to sell BAI. It was not to downsize. It was not to change the Met mission. It was to create better pay, better facilities, better support for the local stations, for all that. He said, in summer of 95, Berkeley programs, program directors were all begging for money. Pacifica was in tight financial conditions. Almost all the stations were in the red. Only one station was not. That was the Houston station. And for a period of time, the KPFA, but BAI was down at the bottom of the barrel. And I felt this would be very positive. In fact, a lot of people told me it was very positive. Oh, and by the way, one of the leading currently dissidents this time, at that time, was suggesting the same thing to me. And it's kind of interesting because he hasn't spoken up yet on this issue, but he said, well, one way that BAI could get out of its mess, so it doesn't have to raise all this funds and go on the air all the time, is just to have a larger working budget. It's like Channel 13 doesn't have to go on the air for fundraising. They have a $150 million a year budget. Only $5 million comes through their fund drives. They have an enormous endowment. So whether they ever did a fundraising or not really wouldn't affect the financial outcome or the structure of the programming at all. Where other stations, they live and die by their fundraising. Trust me, I go around the station. I give, so people understand, I give my show free. I pay my own airfare and hotel. I make no money. I get nothing from it at all. Contrary to what people think, I don't make money from the premiums sold on the air. If anything, I've actually paid to have premiums out of my pocket sent to the station because I had no money. So that's the wrong notion. Talk about being factually off base, big time. In any case, he said, so we just wanted to put the stations in a better position. He said, I thought I was doing something good. I was taking their wish list and just show them a way to make that wish list happen. I didn't have any idea there'd be this backlash. He said, have I learned a lesson? And you know what this lesson's taught me, Gary? Don't ever be that loose and open with your language, because someone will use a noose to hang you with it. He said, and have they ever tried to hang me with that? And he said that the financial documents show that no money to do with any of these, so I suggested just sweeping the signals and so they could have what they wanted. And the dialogue has to be something other than crafted and self-serving and self-interested. Communication is about dialogue, and that's what needs to happen. So I got, again, it makes a big difference when you speak with someone, whether you agree or disagree. Ask a person, in what context did you say something before you judge them? Ask them. And then you can agree with them or you can disagree with them. But when I look at what he said, and I realize that if I, mind you, and you clearly are fully aware of what Aesop said in The Mule, that every truth has two sides. It is well to look at both before we commit ourselves to either. And I'm hoping that one of the things we can do is start to actually sit down with everyone and ask people before you attack them or they attack you, or before you defend yourself or you challenge them, ask them, what are solutions based upon your input? Well, Michael Palmer, in effect, was giving what he considered a positive solution. Now, but we can say yes or no to it, but by taking that and extending it to mean that he was only there to line his own pockets and he is a multinationalist, he's a real estate broker. He's not a millionaire. And I did a lot of background checking on these people who are called, you know, one guy who was supposed to be on the board of Citibank. He's only a low-level employee, volunteered his time. He's been a subscriber to BAI and a big believer. A lot of this has been blown in out of context into self-serving interest, and we got to get away from that if we want to heal.
Okay. Let me say a little something about Michael Palmer from someone who's worked directly with him and had conversations with him. First of all, his firm, C.B. Richard Ellis, is one of the largest commercial real estate firms. And what they do is they try and negotiate cheap sites for rentals in Mexico for maquiladoras, which are sweatshops. And just hold that to the side for a minute. The other thing is that in 1996, this five-year plan didn't come out of the people who work at the various radio stations. This five-year plan came out of the minds of Pat Scott as well as the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, something that we haven't talked about, that has their fingers in this pie, too. And had they sat down with staff people around, because I asked Bessie Walsh on several occasions that we need to have a national conference. We need to have a national conference so we can sit down. I think that the genius to bring Pacifica into a stronger state, considering that we're moving into another, you know, a new millennium here, that we need to sit down and assess where we are and come up with ideas about where we can go, where we want to go, and how we can go about getting there. This was, of course, rejected because it is not about including people in making the decisions. It's about narrowing the decision-making body into smaller and smaller groups. You mentioned WNET, Channel 13. Now, yes, Channel 13 has the money that they need to operate. They can pay people large salaries, but at what cost? A lot of that money, a lot of that underwriting comes from oil companies. It comes from the energy industry, which means that they do nothing, they do no investigative reporting about oil and what is happening around the world in underdeveloped countries, how the people are dying as a result of the extraction, the malicious extraction of oil out of the ground. They do no coverage of the nuclear industry, which is causing deaths all around the world, and how it feeds into the military-industrial complex.
Okay, but Bernard, that's getting off on bashing Channel 13.
No, I'm not bashing them. I'm saying
Channel 13 does a lot of good programming, too.
No question about it.
And, again, we're not here to attack 13.
I'm not trying to attack them. I'm saying...
Let's stick with the solutions.
Okay, but you mentioned Channel 13, and I think it's important.
I mentioned only in the context that they are self-sustaining and don't have to rely upon contributions, and BAI and its stations do.
Okay, and all I'm saying is that there's a cost for traveling the road that they're traveling. And the cost comes in with what you can and cannot do on the air.
Yes and no, because if you use Channel 13 as a model of what can and cannot be done, I'll show you PBS stations that I'm on, like in Detroit, Atlanta, in Miami, in Huntington, Los Angeles. I've been on all of them, who do those kind of programmings and have walk that line between contributions and otherwise. It's not as if 13 is the bastion of integrity on these issues, nor are they the pure villain. And you are right. You have to be very careful where you get your money so it doesn't compromise your principles. You have to.
That's all I'm saying.
I agree with that. Bernard, I want to summarize here because we do have another person coming up. I'd like for you to give us now your summary of what you see a healing potential to be. What would you tell us in your solutions?
Well, I think we have to have the actions of Pacifica reversed. I think that those are the actions that have launched us into where we are right now. That it means that they would have to go back to December 21st, and that we would then the radio station, the people at the station, as well as the local advisory board, which is now moving to toward elections and will be even more reflective of the listeners who will, you know, folks who listen to the radio station, that we turn internally and begin to address our problems, that we don't need Pacifica to come into WBAI to take away our autonomy, because, see, unless it is reversed, this precedent will stand, and that means that they can do it at any point in the future. So it means that, we might have someone there who we really, is really doing a good job, and they'll come in for whatever reasons they have and extract them from. I was never told, Sharan Harper was not told, why we were terminated. We were just terminated. That, me, to my mind, that was a violent act. I didn't do anything wrong. As a matter of fact, if you look at the objective criteria, it seems like we were doing a lot of things right. That, you know, the amount of money that was coming in, the increase in the listenership, the increase in community activities and outreach. We had set up a program with the Manhattan Neighborhood Network where we would then have access to over half a million listeners. So, you know, in order for this to be healed, and it may be a hard pill to swallow, I think that all of this has to be reversed. The people, the person who is now the interim station manager has to remove herself, or has to be removed by Pacifica from WBAI. That it is absolutely necessary. The listeners have made their statement. They're rejecting what's going on at WBAI. They're not supporting it. I think the programming has gotten very, in a lot of instances, has gotten very bad. And it's not worthy of support. And, you know, did anyone who would be a party to jeopardizing the integrity of this radio station needs to remove themselves from the radio station. We've seen censorship take place, censorship in the newsroom. Folks are threatened that they cannot say certain things. The theme song from Wake Up Call cannot be played on the air. Certain people cannot come in or be a party to on-air conversations. You know, it's all of that has to be reversed. That surveillance equipment needs to be taken out of the radio station. The relationship between the FBI and the New York City intelligence has to be severed. You know, we never had such a cozy relationship with the FBI and the New York City intelligence before December the 22nd. So I think all of those things have to be reversed in order for there to be some kind of healing.
Well, I certainly appreciate you sharing these insights with us. And this is part of what we want to do. I believe that we have to have all ideas put on the table. Sort through them and see what makes sense.
Well, I thank you very much for the opportunity to speak. I haven't had that opportunity on the air during a peak listening period, so I do appreciate it.
Well, this is always a forum that's open to you, Bernard.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for calling in.
Okay.
That's Bernard White, and he was a former program director. I'm Gary Knoll. I want now to go to our other panelist who's been standing by, and that is to show you a different perspective of the problem and different perspective on solutions. Solutions must come from all sides. The problem must be understood from all sides. That's why I took the opportunity to at least give you what I had received as the feedback in an in-depth interview with Michael Palmer before. And mind you, I don't go in and attack someone. I have to ask them. I have to, in all fairness, I must ask everyone, what's your point of view? What's your context? What's your perspective? Then we can decide whether or not it's reasonable or unreasonable, tenable or untenable. Bessie Walsh is the executive director at Pacifica. She is the one who is responsible for the hiring of producers at the station. Excuse me, not producers, the general manager at the station. And she has been at the forefront of this firestorm. In fact, she's been the firewall of the firestorm. Let's say hello to Bessie Walsh. Hi, Bessie.
Hi, Gary. Gary, can you hear me?
I sure can.
Hi.
Thank you very much for coming on. I appreciate it. I'm sure the audience does as well. First, I always give an opportunity for people to make any opening statements they wish to give their perspective on the current crisis before we get into the solutions. So if you would please take this opportunity to evolve your thoughts so we can understand from your point of view what happened, and I'm particularly interested in your perspective of the events leading up to the changeover from the December 22nd evening, what happened before that. All right?
Okay. First off, you know, I just want to begin to say that, you know, I've agreed to be on your show because you asked. You personally asked me. And I have a lot of respect for you. But make no bones about this. And this is all just a big lie. And it's being perpetrated by a bunch of zealots. And I make no apologies for trying to upgrade programming, technology, or personnel at any of the five stations. I also make no apologies for trying to expand the network. So if you want to begin there and you want to ask me any questions, I'd be more than willing to answer them.
Okay. I believe it's a constructive to understand if there have been multiple allegations that the removing of Ms. Hissler, who I invited, by the way, for comment, and she declined. By the way, the invitation is certainly open at any time that Valerie Van Isser would like to use the forum that we have to come on to share her point of view. She is certainly welcome to do so. Because a lot of this involves her. And was there any effort on the foundation's part to take over, change the programming, fire people at BAI, or was this simply a matter of replacing a station manager?
It's a matter of replacing a station manager. It was a simple decision made, you know, because of progressive disciplinary action. And with, you know, the foundation, as with any employer, cannot discuss disciplinary actions or any kind of personnel decisions.
I would not violate that privilege, either for Ms. Van Isler's benefit or for yours. I respect that. I'm more interested in the specifics, such as, was Ms. Isler notified prior to December that she was being terminated?
Yes.
How much sooner?
I'm in the month of November. I had a conversation with her. She was offered another position within the foundation, which she did not want.
What position was she offered?
She was offered the position of executive producer for national programming.
In New York or Washington?
In Washington.
Okay. At taking a pay cut, same pay or pay raise?
A pay raise.
All right. I am assuming then that she rejected it?
Yes, she did.
Okay, why?
She just simply rejected it.
Okay, now, she had been on some form of disciplinary a protocol that you have?
Yes.
And
I really don't want to
won't go into that. I will not violate. I'm not stepping there. I'm just trying to get a sequence of events. When was she notified that she was, she had to, you know, shape up?
In the summer.
Okay. So from the summer until November, I'm assuming that you were evaluating the whatever you had her doing.
And, that is correct.
Okay, and then you decided that you wanted a new manager. But you didn't want to fire her. Why didn't you want to fire her?
Out of respect, out of the commitment that she'd had for the foundation, the time and effort that she put into it. And she did do a lot of work at WBAI. But the direction that the station needed to go in, she just wasn't willing to take it.
Okay. So, I don't want to quote you out of context. If I do so, please challenge me on it. I want to make sure I understand the right context here. Are you suggesting then that you had a station manager who was not doing the type of work or taking the station in the direction that you felt was in the best interest of the station? You had warned her as she did not meet the criteria that you required. You decided to replace her, but instead of just firing her, because of the respect you had for her commitment to WBAI, mm-hmm. and because of her tireless efforts on behalf of BAI, you decided to actually give her a raise and give her a position that you felt would be better suited for her qualities.
That's correct. And as you know, with any foundation, any organization, you know, management has the authority to make management changes. This was simply a management change.
So it had nothing to do with Bernard White?
Absolutely nothing.
And had you communicated with Mr. White?
With whom?
Bernard.
Yes.
Okay. So Bernard Picard knew what you were doing and why you were doing it with Valerie?
When, after Valerie had shared with Bernard the fact that she was asked to either take a promotion or to step down from her position, yes, I sat and met with Bernard. I talked with him on the telephone. I came into town. I was in town for several weeks, on and off, trying to be there to accommodate the various meetings that Bernard was supposed to be setting up.
So you had asked Bernard to set up meetings?
No, he told me he was setting up meetings, and there were people that he felt that I should talk to. As a matter of fact, I even came into the station at one point and met with the staff members and the volunteers that were there at that time. And then I offered to meet with them individually. As a matter of fact, my assistant gave out her personal cell phone number and told them if they wanted to talk with me in small groups, they were certainly welcome to give her a call and that I would meet with them. I will tell you that I do have a concern about the vocal minority and some of their tactics, so that we did ask to only meet with people in small groups.
Okay. So, in other words, you wanted to meet, you wanted to share why you were making the change mm-hmm. with the other staff and department heads.
I did meet, like I said, I did meet with the staff at one point in time. I offered to meet with all of the department heads. I offered to meet with them on a department-by-department basis, which I was told was pretty difficult because a lot of departments have a lot of different volunteers that come in at different times. So then I offered to meet with people in small groups.
So you made yourself available to share your concerns and where the station was going, et cetera?
Absolutely. Not only that, there is a 5-year operational plan that's available at the front desk for anybody to read.
Did any of the local people have any input from the local stations in that 5-year operating plan?
The 5-year operating plan is an overview of the direction that I would like to take the foundation in the next 5 years. Within that, each station manager has the responsibility to put together a specific plan for their station on how to move that station forward. And we talked about things like paying people better wages. We talked about things, it talks about better benefits. It talks about basic minimum standards and as far as the technical capabilities of each station. It talks about reinvesting back into the infrastructure of the foundation and its 5 stations.
When you, when you met with the staff in your first meeting, the larger staff,
mm-hmm.
and you were talking about the interim station manager, did you choose to bring someone from inside the station or outside the station?
My choice was always to try to bring somebody from inside the station. And I will say that even though I think Eutrice Lead is doing a fantastic job, she was not my first choice. Jose Santiago was my first choice. And as I understand what happened to him after I left the room, he was basically threatened, bodily harm. And I wasn't there, but that was my understanding, that he was threatened with bodily harm if he was to take that job.
And how long from the time that you offered Jose Santiago, who was news director at that time, correct?
Yes.
From what that time occurred till he said no, how long was that?
From the meeting?
Yes.
Within hours. I mean, he called me back later that evening.
Okay. I interviewed Jose Santiago. Let me share his statements on this, all right?
Okay.
And I'm quoting verbatim. And by the way, anytime I do an interview, I always ask the person after I've taken my notes, I read back the notes and say, is this an accurate representation of what you've said? If not, I'll change it to make sure. I only want to quote people accurately.
Okay.
And he has approved this. He said, in September of year 2000, I was offered the news director job at Pacifica. However, it required moving to Washington, D.C., and I felt that I could do a better job in New York, and I actually wanted to see the Pacifica News Division out of New York.
I've always been impressed with him. I really wanted him at the national level. You're right.
So he said that he turned down the job because he didn't want to move to Washington, but had hoped in time to get that back up to New York. Anyhow, he received a call. He says, I received a call from Bessie in late November to meet with her. And there were two people at the meeting. And by the way, I've independently verified all things with these other people. I always try to get independent verifications. And he said, I was told that Valerie was leaving at the end of the month, or excuse me, the end of the year, meaning December 31st, she was leaving. And would I be interested in taking over that position? I said I would only take over that position if the following criteria were met and guaranteed in writing. One, no other staff changes, just the station manager. Two, no other layoffs. Three, no programming changes. Four, Pacifica could not force any changes upon me or the station BAI. Five, only WBAI staff could make internal changes. Six, Pacifica and Betsy Walsh agreed BAI would remain independent and carrying forward its own mission at the local level and doing everything necessary from our own internal controls and our local advisory board and volunteer and unpaid staff. Jose told the staff this. He said, Gary, Valerie had told the staff she was being squeezed out because she had defended people who were being challenged and had something about Fidel Castro on BAI. And he said, at that time, Gary, my father just came in from Puerto Rico, and he was deathly ill, and he was rushed to the emergency room. This was on a Thursday. And I had to be with my father for 4 days outside of one meeting. I was not in the station. And the only meeting I was at is when Betsy talked with the group, and then as she was leaving the room, he stood up and said, I want to explain, I'm going to be, you know, I've been nominated to be the new station manager, and I want to get your feedback and see if I have your support. He said, quote, Bernard said he would refuse to work with anyone selected by Pacifica, and that precipitated a fast spreading movement where others refused to cooperate. The ball was rolling, Gary, with no way to retrieve it. I tried, but there was nothing I could do to talk any of them out of it. I did have people in the room, staff, paid and unpaid, who supported that I would be a good station selection. I was from inside. I had no political agenda. I had no personal agenda. I didn't have any, you know, special interest groups. I was not a part of anyone's clique. I just wanted to see the station survive. And so I thought that, you know, I could at least bring some reasonableness to everything. But it's rather ironic. So many of these very same people in this room who had called for the general managers being replaced for years was now rallying around. And because, and I believe, Gary, this is what he is saying. He said, I believe because they wanted to save their own little power cliques. And the station at the time had several power cliques. And maybe they thought that they wouldn't be able to get away with what they've gotten away with in the past. There's a lot of unaccountability. There was no single professional standard. For example, people could come in and use the telephones. All the time people were using telephones. And you go over and talk with these people and say, what are you using the phone for? And they just look at you. These are strangers using BAI's personal assets for their own need. Faxes. People were using other people's computers. People could walk out at any time. The front door had no working lock, which is rather ironic because when they said they changed the locks, change what lock? It didn't work. There was no security system. None. And also, a lot of the things going on in the air were simply not objective. Now, it's not that I would have had a chance to change everything, but at least I would have seen that a lot of this stuff was brought to a screeching halt. Instead of having any opportunity to help the station, they began an endless campaign of harassment against me. Personal and physical intimidation, threats, and I was constantly harangued. At the very time, in this angry and hostile environment, I felt overwhelmed, and finally I just couldn't take it anymore. My dad was dying in the hospital, I was taking care of my blind grandmother, and I just said, I can't do it. This is not how I can live my life at this time. And so I declined the offer. Now, is that from your understanding, now that's exactly what he told me and independently confirmed. Do you have anything you'd like to add to that? Is that correct or not? Did he ask you these statements?
I think it's fair. It's a fair assessment. I mean, you know, two people sitting in a room and they come out and two people will tell you two different things. But that's probably pretty close to what I would say. But I think this just gives you some sort of flavor for the kind of tactics that these people are willing to go through and to use simply to get their way, simply because a decision was made that they didn't quite favor. And, you know, good, bad, or indifferent, management does have the right to manage. I had to make a decision regarding the management of the station for the good of the station.
Were you firing people at other stations?
No. First, and I think, in all fairness, as I said at the beginning of the conversation, this was part of a progressive disciplinary action. All right? And okay. I assess each manager different based on a set of goals and whatnot that we've both sat down and put together for the station and the manager themselves. So and the decision was made based on whether or not these were going to be met.
So you had not gone on a purge around other stations?
Of course not.
All right. Had you fired other station managers?
No, I have not.
Okay. Want to try to keep things in perspective. Now,
Gary, bottom line is I only took measures that were in the best interest of the radio station and of the staff of that station. And he is absolutely right. I mean, you know, the things that he asked me for is nothing more than I'm doing at any of the stations. The stations are run by the station managers. I, as executive director, have the responsibility to hire and fire the general managers. I do not come in and tell them how to run the stations on a day-to-day basis. That responsibility has been delegated down to them.
Did you do so illegally?
Of course not. I mean, how is it illegal to decide, you know, that this manager is not going to make her goals? She has no intention of trying to make some of those goals. And so, therefore, I had to make a change. You know, I have the authority, as I said, to hire and fire the managers at the station.
So, in other words, you may advise the community station board, but you're not beholden to it.
The community advisory boards are exactly what, you know, it says they are by law. They're advisory in nature. By law, they have nothing to do with the day-to-day operations of the radio station. That's
okay.
By law.
All right.
All right. The governance board has policy setting, whatever, over the foundation itself. They set the policies. I follow the policies.
When he refused, because of the pressure and harassment against him, Jose Santiago, to take the manager position, how did you select Utrecht Lead?
Actually, what I had done as I was doing research and trying to decide who I was going to put in as manager, I had a list of people that I thought would make a good manager. All right. So I was really disappointed when Jose called me back and said that he would not be able to take on the position, because as I'd done the research, I really felt that he was the best candidate. But that being said, the next person that was on my list was Utrecht Lead. I had a concern, however, because of what Jose said happened to him, whether or not that would be in her best interest, because she is a female. And if, you know, somebody's threatening to attack a man, I had a concern with what they would do to a female. So, you know, I called her up and we sat down and we had a very frank conversation. And I told her what I'd heard that happened to Jose. I told her that regardless of whether or not she took the position or not, there was going to be a management change at WBAI. I said I would prefer it to be from somebody that's on the inside because they know the station. And I felt that, you know, they would have a commitment that would carry the station properly, you know, forward faster than me bringing somebody in from the outside, which I felt would be met with a lot more resistance. And we had this conversation, and she says, well, let me think about it. And she thought about it. And then she gave me a call, and she basically asked me some of the same things that Jose said. You know, was the day-to-day operations of the station going to be her responsibility? I said, yes. She said, was I going to have, you know, talk to her about anything about their programming? I said, no. You know, any other staff changes? I told her that those would be her decisions once she became station manager. So then she said, well, you know, based on that, you know, I'll do it.
What happened that caused the locks to be changed on the night of the 22nd? Tell us from your perspective what led to that.
I had a concern about the security of the station's assets and, to tell you the truth, the well-being of the staff after what happened with Jose. And after hearing that there was, you know, there were people planning to take over the station physically, I had a concern. I sat down with Utrice and I said, well, okay, you know, I told you that I wasn't going to interfere with the operations of the station. And I said, but I do have a concern about the security of the space given, you know, some of the conversations I've heard over the air.
What conversations were you hearing?
Well, that they were recommending that people come in, basically, and, you know, take over the station. I, you know, have an obligation to protect the staff and the assets of this foundation, and one of those is WBAI. So I did what I had to do. I talked to the person that was going to be station manager, made sure that she had no objections. I asked her when would be the time to be the least obstructive to the operations of the station. We chose the time. And, you know, we came in there and we just supervised the fact that the locks were changed. But primarily to let the staff know that they had my permission to do it and to let the building know that these people changing the locks had my full permission to do so and why.
What would have happened? What would have been the worst case scenario? For example, they had have taken over and had sit-ins in all the offices or in the control room and did an all-day, all-night seminar. What would have been the problem?
First off, you have fire codes that would have been violated. People's safety would have been violated. FCC issues. You know, we have to have control of our own air by law. So, I mean, those are the kinds of issues that I was facing that I had to make a decision on. And I felt, you know, the least obstructive way to do it was to simply, you know, secure the station and change the locks.
Now, since that's all right, so let's just put it in this light and tell me if you feel this is accurate or not accurate. You made a decision to change the management.
Mm-hmm.
You felt that there was a hostile environment that may jeopardize the airwaves or the security of the staff or station, so you changed some locks.
Yes.
Is that so unusual what anyone else in any other business in America would do if they have let someone go and are concerned about their security?
I think that's sort of normal practice.
All right. What about the shifting gears for a moment here? The corporation, the Pacifica, they have a policy. Is there any policy to sell any of the stations?
No.
Any effort to sell any of the stations?
No.
Have they put it in writing that they will not sell the stations?
I don't know if they put it in writing. I know that it was a board statement was made that the board was not interested in selling any of the stations.
Okay.
And so that's probably in writing because it's part of the minutes.
Yeah, I have those minutes.
Okay.
All right. So from your perspective, there is no effort to sell any of the BAI
Absolutely
assets.
Absolutely not.
Was there an effort to try to expand the BAI assets, to actually purchase other community stations to continue the community?
Well, you know, BIA is not an entity. If you want to know if there's an effort or if I have plans or I would like to see, if the board would like to see the foundation expanded, the answer is yes.
So, in other words, you'd like to see more stations like BAI around the country?
Excuse me, Gary, I'm sorry.
You would like to see more stations like WBAI around the country?
Absolutely. I mean, especially in the Midwest. I would like to see us have at least two or three stations in the Midwest. I'd like to see us have a station in the South and a station in the Northwest. Yeah. But primarily right now, my immediate problem, my immediate goal was to try to at least get two stations in the Midwest. And there was a station in Florida. You know, I've had to focus so much on this that I haven't been able to even been able to go out and try to raise money to buy those stations that we need to buy. But the answer is yes, I'd like to expand the network and certainly not to sell off anything. We have no plans whatsoever to sell any stations within this foundation. We're the only entity of our kind. We own 5 public radio stations in 5 major markets. That's influence, all right? And that is not for sale.
Has there been an effort that you're aware of to change the original mission of Blue Hill?
No.
How are the board members selected? Is it a democratic process or is it an old boy process? How does it work?
Well, anybody can nominate someone to the board. And then that nomination goes to the governance committee. And then from the governance committee, the people are either nominated out to the full board or not. They interview candidates, and then they're nominated. There's a vote, and then they're nominated to the full board.
Okay. Now, from what you see now, in retrospect of what has happened, what would you have liked to have seen changed or done differently in the changeover at WBAI?
That's a difficult question because, again, I wanted to do it in the least disruptive way possible. I made every effort to do it. I don't see how I could have done anything differently. What you just asked me off the cuff like that, I don't see how I could have done anything differently.
What about the station having the security system?
Well, you know, again, I've done what I think is the best for the station itself. When you talk about what about the station having a security system, how many offices and businesses don't? I've had staff members that were attacked. It is my job to protect the staff of these stations as well as its assets, and I take that very seriously. My staff, a member of my staff, was physically attacked in the station.
Was that the fellow that's punched in the mouth?
Just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
Then I had, you know, people are being attacked by a small, violent group of individuals who are upset because whatever decisions are made, they don't like. And since they don't like them, they have launched personal attacks. They have blackmailed people. They have threatened people. You know, and I have to protect these people.
Okay, I think we should make it very clear that those attacks have not occurred based upon any of the legitimate proponents for change or challenge.
I'm not saying who is doing it, but I
understand.
But there's an element of the dissidents that are violent and volatile.
All right.
But, and I haven't heard that, you know, the group as a whole condemn them. You know, I get desperate. I haven't heard anybody condemn that. I certainly haven't heard them step up front and tell them to stop and that this is not going to, you know, change things in their way. I haven't heard one word.
Many listeners, certainly my listeners, and I'm sure other listeners as well, want to be a part of the process in selecting board members. And how can they go about being a part of this process?
Well, I can tell you that in the fall, the chair of the governance committee, it was John Murdoch, said for the record that we were going to be holding board nominations. And those, you know, the request for resumes was accepted through the end of November. That announcement was put on the air of all five stations. And anyone could have submitted a resume that would have been considered by the governance committee and therefore the board.
All right. Doesn't Houston have input? By the way, I want to go just for a moment to Houston.
Okay.
There have been some challenges that the Houston station no longer serves the local community, rather serving mainly a music venue to a particular type of audience out there, and a lot of the important programming that was once their hallmark is no longer on the air.
Yeah, the way that I think I can best answer that is that this programming decisions are made on the local level. They're made by the general manager and the program director of those stations. The local advisory board is there for program ascertainment. If the programming that's being provided by that station is not a viable community service, and you know they've got information and data to prove that, they're supposed to take that to the board. And then the board will then sit down and talk with myself and the general manager. But if you see the fact that the audience listenership is going up, the overall support of the station is going up because the revenue is going up, that we have a very high staff morale it is hard for me to see that they're not doing a viable community service. That's what I like. I mean, I love to walk into a station and people say, hi, Bess, you know, everything is great. They're smiling. They're having a good time. You know, if my people can't come to work and have a good time, that's what I have a problem with, because we don't pay them enough to be miserable, quite frankly. I want them to have a good time. I want them to enjoy what they're doing. And to say that it's not doing a viable service is ridiculous. If they have a 1.3 share of their market, that means somebody's listening.
Okay, but here's a question. What if that 1.3% share is not the people who originally were supposed to be served by the foundation? You could have a 20 share.
The face of America is changing every day. Every day. And life is changing every day. All right? What I was 10 years ago, I'm not today. All right? So things change. So if that community is changing and there's a shift and there's a shift in the listenership, that's changed. And that's what that community is asking for. And that is a community radio station. And because the community is changing, I mean, that's what I'm trying to say. You have a few people that, because decisions that are made are not made that they like, that they're going to decide, they're going to disrupt everything. This is a vocal minority. And I want to say this over and over again. It's a vocal minority. All right? Bernard was right about one thing. We have close to 1 million listeners. And you have a few of them, trying to disrupt and destroy this foundation and everything that we stand for. The face of America has changed. So, yes, the people that listen are probably changing too. Or they look different than they did 50 years ago.
What are your concerns about the accountability of programming on the air? Do you ever have a conversation with station program directors for station managers about whether or not a given program is truly serving the interest that it's supposed to be serving, and serving it at a level of competence and professional and accountability that should be a higher standard?
Okay. I want to, this almost takes us full circle, because you come back to the vision statement that's available at all the stations, that it talks about doing great radio. They have, each of the managers have a responsibility to do great radio, not good radio. Great radio. That's a basic minimal standard of this foundation. So, yes, they are talked about the standards of their programming. I give them advice on a constant basis. I talk with my managers on a weekly basis. I try to visit the station on a monthly basis, sometimes bi-monthly. I've been spending a lot of time on the East Coast, with New York. So some of the stations may be feeling a little neglected right now. But even if I don't visit the stations, I talk to the managers. So, yes, advice is given. Do I go in and make the decisions? The answer is no, because that's why I hired that manager, and that's why that manager is supposed to have a program director.
Let me try to put things in perspective and just kind of bring it full circle and then see if it's accurately stated or not. For those of you who are just listening, I'm concluding the first of what will be an ongoing series each Monday of bringing voices to the air from all points of view to share with you their ideas, both their ideas of the problems and their ideas of the solutions. And doing so where no one is censored, everyone has an opportunity to say what they need to say. And it'll be in a one-hour format, hence, forth in the future. It would be an imposition to take 2 hours. I just needed to do it today, and I thank Armand DeVille very much for allowing that to occur. Bessie Walsh is the person who is responsible for seeing that the station managers are hired. She has the requirements to see that the right person who has the capability and professional background in managing large numbers of people. Now, to give you an idea, an average station, an average commercial station deals with about 10 really strong personalities. Their pay, the station managers can go anywhere from $200,000 to upwards of $800,000 at the big stations. An average station might have 30 different people. BAI has over 250 individuals. Volunteers, producers, and full-time staff. So you have to have someone who has a professional background in management skills and dealing with people, and also keeping the motion going forward to what the original foundation was supposed to do. What is this community broadcasting station supposed to do? And can I control the station so that little cliques of power group people do not, as they historically have done at all the stations, do this? Even on KPFK in Los Angeles, there was a time when there were some really angry people on the air there, not spewing any information that really helped or improved the listenership's interest in life. It took a long time before they left. You have to have a good manager to be able to do that. One who's not intimidated by people that yell and scream, get up in your face, as sometimes people do. I can tell you this, from experience in both fields, a lot of behavior in non-commercial radio would be not tolerated in professional radio, and that is commercial radio. You have some who are extremely diligent. You've had remarkable human beings on the air, and they are gifts to all of us. And I commend them for the ability to handle so many situations, do so well. That's just the background. Then we have Bessie, who's saying, "All right, I have."
Come into your statement.
Yes.
The programming changes that have been made have not been motivated by any desire, but only the desire to reach the broadest audience possible at all five radio stations. You know, I think Pacifica is still the only home of true progressive and alternative programming. I mean, we have the prison show, we have the gay and lesbian voices. And now they're in Houston, the same station that you were asking me whether or not they had quality radio. Of course we do. And I believe that is the goal of all of our managers. And they are growing and they are learning and they do need coaching. But with that being said, their only goal is to continue to give that community, this alternative community, programming that they can't get anyplace else. And I believe that we're doing that.
All right. So you decided to make a change. You came to New York City. You had explained to the program the station manager that she was going to be replaced, but you were giving her an opportunity for another job, better paying, more autonomy, and without the hassles of running a station, and allowing her to use her unique and special gifts.
Absolutely.
Of which she has.
Mm-hmm.
And respecting for the time and commitment she had given to the station. And you had selected someone inside the station, Jose Santiago, news director, who was not controversial, who would become the station manager. Outside of that, it was hands off and on to seeing the larger mission we're taking care of. That then became the basis for the station manager trying to protect her position, not wanting to leave, refusing your offer, and instead enlisting the services of other people who would then try to make this a national issue, trying to tie in the conflicts at the local, at the national level, and the contentions with the national board, as if this were just an extension of the local board, and trying to bring the two issues together. And you're suggesting they are two separate issues, and that there was no plan by the national board to use this as a basis of taking over and eliminating the democratic process of the BAI. Is that accurate or inaccurate?
That's pretty much accurate. I do want to make it clear, just in case, just for your listeners, that this was a staff decision made by me. The board is a governance board. They set and make policy. They do not make staff decisions.
So the board had nothing to do with who's
board
on the air or what they say or anything
else? The executive director. And the executive director is responsible for hiring and firing the managers of the five stations.
Okay. Just need to know, so you never had any conversations with any board members about who to hire, who to fire, or to take away the power of BAI?
First, I do want to say this. I mean, you say you never had any conversation with any board members. I mean, their responsibility also is to advise me and to talk to me and to coach me. So, yeah, I've had conversations. I mean, you don't make decisions in a tunnel. I may say, you know, I've got this situation going on. This is what I'm thinking. And I seek advice from people. And so I have sought advice from time to time from different people, and some of them have been our board members.
Okay.
But the ultimate decision was mine, and I stand by that decision. It was the best decision that could have been made, I believe, in the direction of WBAI.
Bessie Walsh, I want to thank you very much for coming on and sharing your views with us. I also very much want to thank Bernard White for coming on and sharing his views with us. I consider both individuals to be responsible, intelligent, and truly seeking a stronger, better station for the future. Even though they may have different ideologies, all ideas should have value. I'm Gary Knoll. I want to thank you all very much for listening.